ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। वरं वृणीध्वां भद्रं वो यूयं मे नृपनन्दना सौहार्दिनाप्रथाद्धर्मास्तुष्टोऽहं सौहृदेन वा।
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear sons of the King, I am very much pleased by the friendly relationships among you. All of you are engaged in one occupation, devotional service. I am so pleased with your mutual friendship that I wish you all good fortune. Now you may ask a benediction of me. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Since the sons of King Prachini Barahishat were all united in Krishna consciousness, the Lord was very pleased with them. Each and every one of the sons of King Prachini Barahishat was an individual soul, but they were united in offering transcendental service to the Lord. The unity of the individual souls attempting to satisfy the Supreme Lord or rendering service to the Lord is real unity. In the material world, such unity is not possible. Even though people may officially unite, they all have different interests. In the United Nations, for instance, all the nations have their particular national ambitions, and consequently they cannot be united. Disunity between individual souls is so strong within the material world that even in a society of Krishna consciousness, members sometimes appear disunited due to their having different opinions and leading toward material things. Actually, in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be two opinions. There is only one goal, to serve Krishna to one's best ability. If there is some disagreement over service, such disagreement is to be taken as spiritual. Those who are actually engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be disunited in any circumstances. This makes the Supreme Personality of Godhead very happy and willing to award all kinds of benedictions to his devotees. As indicated in this verse, we can see that the Lord is immediately prepared to award all benedictions to the sons of King Prachini Barahishat. Yo nismaranti sandhyayam yusman anudhinam naraha tasya bhrat The Lord continued, Those who remember you every evening of every day will become friendly with their brothers and with all other living entities. Those who will offer me the prayers... Because you have with pleasure accepted within your hearts the orders of your father and have executed those orders very faithfully, your attractive qualities will be celebrated all over the world. We are reading this evening from the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes the activities of the Prachetas, one of the most beautiful stories and which includes some of the most important prayers in all of the Bhagavatam. The Parichetas were the sons of King Prachini Barhishat. It is described in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that King Prachini Barhishat, he was a king who was a very pious and religious man, but he was more or less attached to the karma kanda approach to Godhead. But he knew that his sons, in order to be trained properly, in order to eventually take over the state affairs, they had to perform tapasya. They had to go to a holy place, and under the training of advanced devotees, they had to purify their consciousness. You see, in those days, the standard of a proper leader in any field of society was that they had pure vision in which they could truly and genuinely present the will of God to the common man and protect the laws of God. So it was an absolute necessity that his children become very, very highly spiritually advanced. Now, while they were away, what happened is Narada Muni came to their father, King Prachini Barhishat. And it's a long, long story of how he very carefully preached to the king. See, the king was very attached to material life, although he was a devotee of the Lord. And being a king, he was naturally a proud man. And if Narada Muni would have just come in and said, "You are in Maya," the king probably would have not been very attentive to hear. Because people who are proud, they like to hear themselves being glorified. They don't like themselves at all being criticized. So Narada Muni, who knew human nature very well, he was a real preacher, a true preacher. A true preacher will do anything and say anything to save a person from Maya. He is not self-righteous, thinking, "I have to speak the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, even if you run away in complete disgust and fear." He will always preach the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, but present it in such a way that you will accept, that you will open your heart and open your ears. So Narada Muni, he approached King Prachini Barhishat and he explained, "Oh, you are a very good king. You are doing nice service for the society. Let me tell you a nice story about a king named Puranjan. Certainly you've never heard of this king, but I'd like to tell you this story." And then he went on, many, many chapters of the Bhagavatam describe this narration of King Puranjan, who was a good king, who was very attached to his wealth, very attached to his beautiful wife, the queen, very attached to children, reputation, fame, and all these other things. And then he went on to describe how these attachments created such a difficulty in his life, how he was so much a slave of his senses, and how ultimately he died and he had to take another birth. And by the time Narada Muni finished his story, Maharaj Prachini Barhishat realized that he was talking about him. All he did is change the names. And he was so attentive to hear the whole story that by the time he realized it was him he was talking about, he already understood the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And he came just right out and said, "Narada Muni,
I'm completely in Maya. What should I do? And Narada Muni told him, you should surrender to Krishna. So he left and surrendered to Krishna. Meanwhile, the Prachetas, they were off in the wilderness performing tapasya, so there was no king for a long time. Now the Prachetas, they were all brothers. And their father told them to be Krishna conscious and told them how to be Krishna conscious. And by their obedience to the order of their guru and their willingness to accept sacrifice, they were fasting, they were offering prayers, they were immersed in meditation, they had the darshan of Lord Shiva, who taught them a mantra in which to receive the darshan of Vishnu. And in this way, Vishnu himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appeared before them. And it is described here in this verse how the Lord was so pleased, especially because of their friendship toward one another. That is really what attracted his divine darshan into their lives. My dear sons of the king, I am very much pleased by the friendly relationships among you. All of you are engaged in one occupation, devotional service. I am so pleased with your mutual friendship that I wish you all good fortune. Now you may ask a benediction of me. And Srila Prabhupada is explaining here how the unity of individual souls is very, very difficult in this material world. There are so many attempts, but as long as we have separate interests, our unity is superficial, artificial, and has no real substance. The example is given of the United Nations. The United Nations was formed after a great world war, because the nations of the world fighting over property. We have the right over this property. And somebody else was saying, no, we have the right over this property. There was hundreds and thousands of lives killed over who is the proprietor. Ultimately, according to God, he is the only proprietor of everything. Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. Therefore, this United Nations is useless in really creating peace in the world. Because after all, since the United Nations was formed, there was the Korean War, there was the Vietnam War, there's wars in Pakistan and India, there's wars in Africa, there's wars in Iraq, Iran, Ireland, Beirut. There's wars all over the world, and practically all of these warring countries are members of the United Nations. Because they're coming together to try to unite on the basis that if I am kind to you, I will have more sense gratification. That is the bargain. If I am a little lenient and cooperate with you, I'll get more sense gratification. But everyone's thinking in terms of their own sense gratification. Every nation in the United Nations is not really thinking of the world. They're only thinking what my country will get out of this unity. And it's all based on an illusion that I am this body and that this land that I was born in is mine. According to the Bhagavatam, it is described that anyone who considers the land of his birth to be something very great and important and worshipable has no more mentality than an ass or a cow. Simply the bodily concept of life. Everything is the property of God. Until we unite on this principle that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and we are all his servants and we all work together to execute his will, there is no question of unity or peace. the Prajetas
were brothers.
And it's very difficult in Kali Yuga for brothers to be good friends. Huh? There's usually some envy, competition amongst brothers. We see within families, oftentimes brothers are suing each other in courtrooms. They won't even talk to each other. They hate each other. Huh? Why is this? Familiarity breeds contempt. Srila Prabhupada used to tell the story of how the father, he is asking his two sons to massage him. And each son wants the father to favor him. Instead of just doing so good at the massage, he reaches over to the other son's side and pokes him with his fingernail. And the father goes, ah! And then the other son reaches over to the other side and punches him with his fist. The father goes, ah! Then the other son reaches over to the other, bites him, ah! The other son reaches to the other side and squeezes his flesh with his fingers, ah! They're this way, they're kicking, punching, scratching, biting. And the father's in tremendous anxiety. The father doesn't care which son did it. So in this way, Kali Yuga goes on. Krishna is all of our father. In family circles, even the spiritual master is our father. Prabhupada explains, sometimes there's even this disunity in Krishna consciousness. In order to present ourselves as very good to our guru, we try to somehow or other expose our god brother for being a rascal. And it just causes pain to the guru. So on all levels, spiritual, material, in the age of Kali, this is a very powerful influence. Quarrel and hypocrisy. In Kali Yuga, the way to come to the top is not by the merit of your quality, but to tear everyone else to the bottom. Huh? Prabhupada explains spiritual competition is you do the best you can thinking that I will, by doing really good, I will inspire my god brother to do even better than me. And when he does better than me, I will be inspired to do better. And in this way, there's no animosity. We both want to inspire the other person to do better than me. And in this way, the spiritual master simply enjoys seeing us both doing everything we possibly can, trying our best, and inspiring one another in this way. That is spiritual competition. But material competition means somehow or other, drag him down, bring him down. Under my lotus feet, he will stand forever. Like that. And in this way, what happens? Krishna, Guru, if it's a family situation, our father, everyone suffers. What does this mean? This means our motivation is not to please. Our motivation is to enjoy. Krishna consciousness means to be enjoyed, to please Krishna, to please his representatives. And material consciousness means to be the enjoyer. Recently, one devotee was asking about some of our devotees go to Vrindavan and they're having good fun. This roaming through the groves, chanting, Hey Rad, Hey Brajadeva Ki Chalalite, Hey Nanda Shuno Kutha. Ah, where is Radha? Where is Krishna? With tears in their eyes. This, in the Saki Bhava, if I am Krishna's gopi, I will go here, there. Today I will see Krishna dancing with peacocks. Tomorrow I will go to the place where he is embracing Sri Radhika. Ah, just see, I am Paramhams.
cannot see Vrindavan by just going and looking. If you want to enjoy Vrindavan, you'll never see Vrindavan. This is called Prakrita Sahajya. It means cheap devotees with a cheap mentality who take Krishna, the Dham, and everything else cheaply. If you want to see Vrindavan, there's only one way. You have to surrender to Guru. There's no other way. Through obedience, through purification. Then when you go to Vrindavan, you'll see it, what it is. Otherwise, what you see is an illusion. It's not the real Brajadham. Krishna reveals himself according to the quality of your love, according to the quality of your surrender, according to the pureness of your heart. Therefore, our devotees who are sincerely, honestly, and earnestly living in this polluted city of Bombay with all sorts of atrocities all around and all sorts of difficulties, but pushing on, trying to serve their mission, they are seeing Vrindavan thousands of times more clearly than those people who are simply enjoying walking around on the banks of the Jamuna thinking, ah, very nice, here I am in the holy Dham. In this way, we have to learn that real spiritual life is based on pleasing Krishna and pleasing the spiritual master through serving him, not through enjoying him. People come to the temple to enjoy the temple. We should come to the temple with the spirit of serving the deity in the temple, serving the Vaishnavas in the temple. Only through this process of devotional service does Krishna reveal himself. And this is the real principle of unity. It is the only principle of real unity. When we give up the false conception of being the enjoyer and we come together to strive to help one another to please Krishna. And there's nothing that pleases Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra more than when he sees the spirit souls coming together in love and trust to serve him. There's nothing has greater power than that. Therefore, Lord Jesus says in the Bible, wherever two or more of you gather in my name, I will be there. To gather in his name means to come together for his will, putting aside our own egos and simply coming together to serve him, to glorify him. And also, Krishna told Narada Muni that you will find me in one place wherever my devotees gather together to chant my holy names. So there is no greater power than the unity of sincere souls coming together to please Krishna. He is explaining here, I am very much pleased by the friendly relationships among you. Certainly, you know the way brothers are. They certainly must have different opinions, different ways of doing things, different things that they do not like about one another. Huh? But friendly relation means for the sake of their service to their father, their guru and Krishna, they're willing to put all these things aside as unimportant, petty, and insignificant, and work together for the whole, for the pleasure of the complete whole, or Krishna. When Krishna sees the friendly relationships amongst devotees who have one occupation, it is described here, all of you are engaged in one occupation, devotional service. Within this congregation tonight, we have students, we have industrialists, we have doctors, we have housewives, businessmen, dentists, managers, We have practically every field of society here tonight. But we have only one occupation, and that is devotional service to Krishna. We have people who are very literate. We have people here tonight with PhDs. We have people here who hardly have any education. People of all castes, of various nationalities, with different propensities. How are we all united? Because by the mercy of Gurudev, we have all learned that the only real occupation of our life is to simply dovetail our propensities together in the service of Krishna. This will create a spirit of love and trust. Love and trust breaks down when we have separate interests, when we have separate motives, when we want to be the enjoyer, when we want to be the proprietor, when we want to be the controller. And love and trust is established when we want one thing, to be the humble servant. To be the humble servant of Krishna, of the spiritual master, of the sadhus, to be the humble servant especially of one another. You cannot separate the guru from his devotees. So in this way, the prachetas is being glorified by Krishna himself, Narayan, for their friendly, loving relationships with one another, centered on one occupation, devotional service. I am so pleased with your mutual friendship that I wish you all good fortune. Now you may ask a benediction of me. And Prabhupada, and here it is in the next verse, the Lord continued, those who remember you every evening of every day will become friendly with their brothers and with all other living entities. This is very important, because by hearing submissively this beautiful story of the unity of the Lord's devotees, we become naturally inclined toward being the well-wisher of our brothers, our sisters, and all living entities. This is the power of hearing these glorious stories of the great souls who have dedicated everything for the Lord. So in this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, there is no greater service that we can render than teaching people how to unify under the banner of God's name. This is the greatest service we can render to society. You can be a Babaji in the holy dham, or you can be a yogi in Himalayas. And certainly by that process, there is some great benefit to society. But the greatest benefit is by example, to teach people how to come together to chant the glories of Lord's name. Therefore, in this age of Kali Yuga, the only process of sacrifice which is recommended is Sankirtan. Throughout the Vedic literatures, Sankirtan, Jagyai Sankirtana Priyaya. Then in the age of Kali, intelligent people know the only process of purification that's really effective and practical is Sankirtan. Now, japa means to sit alone and chant. Bhajan means maybe alone, maybe not. San means together. To chant the holy names congregationally is the panacea cure for all the ills in this age of Kali Yuga. To unite together under the divine auspicious influence of the holy name is the only means of counteracting the influence of quarrel and hypocrisy in this age. The power of doing it together is the power that most of all attracts God. And it's the hardest thing to do. To do anything together with anybody in Kali Yuga is very difficult. Because in due course of time, we just come up with our own crazy opinions of everything. And we disunite. Prabhupada explains here that even amongst great devotees, there's always differences of opinion. There's always disagreements. But that's good. Disagreements are good. As long as we keep the purpose the same, that we're doing it for Krishna. There must be different disagreements. Because we are all jivatmas, we are all individual souls. Therefore, different Vaishnavas will have different ways of doing things. And if it wasn't like that, we would all be Mayavadis, impersonalists. In the spiritual world, everyone has a different way of doing things. Mother Yashoda, she's trying to keep Krishna in at home and safe all night. And the gopis are trying to attract him to leave in the middle of the night. Huh? It's definitely a difference of opinion. The gopis are saying, Krishna, come out, let's dance. And Mother Yashoda is saying, Krishna, stay home, be a good boy. Total difference of opinion. The gopis and Mother Yashoda, in hearts, they'll never agree. Mother Yashoda wants Krishna home all night, the gopis want him out all night. Huh? It's a conflict. But they're one in that they're both doing it for one purpose, to please Krishna. And therefore, you don't see them hating each other or arguing with each other. They love each other. Yes, Mother Yashoda, you have your way. Yes, gopis, you have your way. Radharani, Lalita, Vishaka, you have your way. But we're all doing it for Krishna's pleasure. So the disagreement becomes irrelevant. Oftentimes we cite the beautiful story of the Bhagavatam of when Ashwatthama killed the five sons of Draupadi. And our Draupadi was bereaved. And all the Pandavas were very much sorrowful. So Arjuna, with the help of Lord Krishna, captured Ashwatthama, brought him back to Draupadi. Bhima was standing there. Draupadi, soft-hearted as she was, she said, oh, please let him go. After all, he's the son of our guru, Dronacharya, and his mother, he's the only son, and how much she will cry if she loses her only son. She will become like me. I don't want her to become like me. So sad. So let him go. Be kind to him. And Bhima, he had a different opinion. Kill him. Give up this sentimental nonsense and kill this rascal. Now, who is right? Let's have a vote. How many say that Draupadi, you have to raise your hand for one or the other. How many say Draupadi was right? How many say Bhima was right? You see, there's disagreements right here. If we were not united on a higher principle, we could have a civil war right here in this room tonight. World wars have been waged on less significant disagreements than this. Bhima was a Paramahamsa. He was a personal associate of Lord Krishna. And Draupadi was a personal associate of Lord Krishna. They were both pure devotees of the highest order. They were both perfect and correct. Although they had complete, she was a woman, she had a soft heart, and he was a Kshatriya who wanted to see the law applied in all circumstances. Huh? According to their natures,
They were both trying to serve Krishna and please Krishna the best way they could. And Krishna heard both of them, and he realized that they're both perfect. They're both correct. Neither of them have any flaw. So therefore, Krishna worked out a way where he was simultaneously killed and not killed by humiliating him. Because for a kshatriya, humiliation is worse than death. In this way, Draupadi was satisfied and Bhima was somewhat satisfied. So, here is two great souls. But did it cause a disunity between them? Bhima and Draupadi were the greatest objects of each other's love. And this disagreement did not disturb that love even one trace. Because they knew that they were both doing it for Krishna the way they naturally were inclined to doing it for Krishna, with no other motivation but service to the Lord. So yes, there will be disagreements. There will be different ways of doing things. There will be different moods. It's not that one is higher than another. After all, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, he was one type of preacher. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was a completely different type of preacher. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji would sit in Navadvip, and if somebody would come to him and they had any material aspirations, he would become very, very like thunderbolt upon them. He didn't like to see the face of materialistic people. One time, Prabhupada told a story that Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was sitting just to get away from materialistic people. He was sitting at the place where people would go to pass stool on the banks of the Ganga. And nobody likes to stay there longer than it takes to finish the business. But he was living there. And one man came to him and said, "I want to be your disciple and get your blessings." Gaur Kishore says, "I don't want to see the face of anyone who wants any material benedictions. I'm only here to give love of God, pure devotional service. If you want that, I can give you." He said, "No, that's what I want. That's what I want. Give me your blessings." He was thinking, by getting his blessings, he'll get good luck. So Gaur Kishore said, "All right, my blessing is you sit here in this stool hole with me and chant Hare Krishna." The man ran away as fast as he could. Huh? This was his style of preaching. He was very strong. If he saw anyone was in any way a sahajya, taking Krishna consciousness cheaply, false tears, he would expose them like a thunderbolt. But if he saw someone was sincere and genuine, he would become very, very humble servant of such a person. But he would never leave Navadvip. One time he had cataracts in his eyes. He was about to go blind. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta said, "Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, please come to Calcutta. We have a doctor friend who can give you a nice operation." He said, "Calcutta is hell. I will not go to hell." So he wouldn't go. So they tried, "Please come, come." So he got so, he didn't like these people telling him. So what he did is he just walked to the Ganges, went to take his bath, and disappeared in the Ganges. And everyone, "Oh my God, he drowned himself, he committed suicide. It's all our fault because we were putting pressure on him to go to Calcutta." Then some days later, Bhaktivinoda, Bhakti Siddhanta were bathing in the Ganges, and this is days later. Out from the Ganges comes Gaur Kishore to start walking away. He said, "Don't ever ask me to go to hell, Calcutta, again." Bhakti Siddhanta was his disciple. And what did Bhakti Siddhanta do? He made his main base in Calcutta, his headquarters. Huh? And when he was about to leave his body,
they told Bhaktisiddhanta, we can take you. We know you're about to leave this world. You have already told us. We can take you to the holy dham of Mayapur and you could leave there. And Bhaktisiddhanta said, no. He said, my place of preaching is Calcutta. I want to leave my body here. This is the battlefield where I have given my life to preach to the masses. Wherever there's many people, that's the best place to preach. So, would you agree that they had two different moods? Huh? But what crazy fool would say one is better than the other? If you say that Bhaktisiddhanta was a greater devotee than Gaur Kishore, Bhaktisiddhanta would very strongly disagree with you because you're offending his own guru. And if you say that Gaur Kishore was a better devotee, he would become very angry because he would think Bhaktisiddhanta has given his life to preach everything to everyone. They're both perfect, equally perfect. Because they're both pure devotees simply acting according to how God is directing them, according to their natures. Factually, Gaur Kishore Ras Babaji did preach to the whole world by empowering Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati through the Parampara system. Huh? So how can we discriminate? Neophyte devotees like to think, my guru is the only guru, he's the best, he's the greatest. That's good, very nice. But a more mature understanding is to see that any great guru who is, we follow our guru, strictly, nobody else. We will follow our guru to the end of our life. We will not deviate. But that doesn't mean we have to say anybody else is less. If somebody else is sacrificing his life to spread Krishna consciousness with another way, in God's eyes, how do we discriminate? Who's better? We accept ours is best. We accept ours is our life and soul. But the other person's disciple is thinking the same thing. The real question is, are they giving their lives completely to the service of the Lord? If they have no other motivation than that, in the eyes of God, if they are both perfect. And therefore, we find in the Vaishnav tradition, even disciples of other gurus are completely united with love, even though they may disagree in so many methods and techniques. These disagreements of techniques and so forth only make their life more interesting, full of variegatedness. They don't hate each other for it. They don't think each other less than one another for it. Because they know that all of our gurus are united in one principle, surrender to Krishna and teaching surrender to Krishna. And that's what we're living for. Therefore, we're all brothers and sisters. What to speak of disciples of the same guru? We have to unite on the higher principles. On the lesser principles, there will be disunity. Obviously, because we're all individuals. But in the higher principle, if there is unity, then even the disunities, the disagreements, they become spiritual and they only make life interesting. Huh? That argument between Bhima and Draupadi is a wonderful, wonderful subject matter to discuss. Because they both were giving their life to the service of the Lord. They had one occupation, surrendering to the will of God. And that is the only principle we should live for. And if we want to maintain and preserve the unity amongst Vaishnavas, we have to unite on this higher principle. Otherwise, we will disintegrate. Huh? If we expect to be uniting on lower principles and disregarding the higher, we have to give up pride. We have to give up the sense of being the enjoyer. We have to give up the ego. Then naturally, if we're striving together for this purpose, being willing to tolerate and putting aside our own conditionings
for the mission of the spiritual master in Krishna, then we can enter into the true meaning of Sankirtan, the congregational glorification of God's name. This is the method taught by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and this is the prime benediction for all humanity, to learn how to unite in the congregational chanting of Krishna's holy name. Is there any questions? Yes. Prabhupada said democracy means demon crazy. Prabhupada had a different opinion, and because sometimes democracy, but ultimately democracy is only so good as everybody is living for the truth. If devotees who are all united under one purpose vote, then that has power. If that is the guru's desire that we vote. But for common men who don't know anything really about the real principles of religion or truth, for them to vote, they're just going to vote for that which is going to give them the best sense gratification. That is why Prabhupada called it demon crazy. If you get a whole nation of people who are attached to sense gratification, who are they going to vote for? Simply the person who gives the best sense gratification. Therefore, in Vedic society, there was no such thing as such as that. There was democracy amongst the Brahmins. Those who are not just caste Brahmins, but people who were really and deeply God-conscious and thoroughly knowing the scriptures, they would come together and discuss and vote to decide who was going to be the king. And how to direct the king. So in the circles of Vaishnavas, Vaishnava etiquette, yes, if there's a disagreement, we should humble ourselves to that person who is superior. That is etiquette of Vaishnavas. Yes? Muni was sweet to King Prichini Barishat, but sometimes he was very strong also, depending on what would work the best. According to a man's receptivity, he would preach just like that. He was not very sweet to Magrari the Hunter. He frankly told Magrari the Hunter right out that you're going to die and you're going to suffer horrible death and horrible consequences. And he revealed to him all of his sufferings. He was very straightforward and direct. So Narada Muni was an expert preacher, meant he was empowered by Krishna to know how to deal with each individual. If we are not in that position, we have to use our good intelligence and pray to Krishna and pray to Guru Maharaj to give us guidance and intelligence and try our best. And if we do, Krishna will give us the proper intelligence. And what that means is that we don't instruct somebody for the sake of instructing somebody. We instruct a person only to bring him up in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes silence is golden. Sometimes not saying anything, but just acting in such a way that he sees by your example, he'll take that to heart. If speaking to a person, if that person has such an ego that it's only going to offend him and turn him against you and against the association of devotees, it's better to not. Huh? It's like Prabhupada said, if you go to approach a rich man who's puffed up, what you should do is put straw between your teeth, offer him pranams, and say, my dear sir, how successful you are. You're a very great man, you're a very noble man, you're a very pious man, but I would like to inform you that you are a fool and you are wasting your life. Huh? In other words, you have to put a person's consciousness in such an atmosphere that he's willing to receive the message. Otherwise, you're doing more harm than good. Sometimes the best preaching is not preaching. Huh? And sometimes the best preaching is preaching. If somebody's running toward the cliff, ready to fall into the mouth of Maya, you shouldn't just stand there and say, well, if I preach, he'll get mad at me. You have to use your good intelligence to figure out some way to stop him. Huh? And whatever way Krishna best gives you the intelligence that will work, you must do that. Huh? And if you are really concerned about that person, Krishna will show you the way. You can also consult more experienced preachers, more advanced devotees. How could I best deal with this person? In Kali Yuga, the human ego is very strong. In Kali Yuga, when you try to help someone, they hate you. Huh? Sometimes. So you have to help them in such a way that you can continue helping them. Read that story carefully. There are so many beautiful and wonderful examples which enlighten your life. It's a very deep story. It's very highly symbolic. And if you really, really apply your intelligence to understanding that story, you will find miraculous instructions every aspect of your life. But because it's allegorical, it's symbolic, it is more difficult to understand. You have to really apply your mind and your intelligence. And because we're lazy, we just want to skim over it very fastly and we think, oh, why is this in the Bhagavatam? But when we approach the Bhagavatam, we have to approach it in a very, very sober and very, very careful and very systematic way. When we read, we shouldn't just read to get done with the chapter. We should really read every verse, every line, to try to understand what's being said and why. And of course, you'll never understand unless you carefully scrutinizingly study the purports. Some of the most wonderful, the most dynamic, and the most applicable purports in the entire Bhagavatam are in this story by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
In fact, when Srila Prabhupada left this world, the purports which most directly explain how a disciple should see this world after his guru leaves and how he should respond to the disappearance of guru, they are in this chapter. Huh? We were all completely taking shelter of the purports of this chapter at that time of the greatest crisis of our life. Huh? Study these purports very carefully. You'll never understand with your brain what Narada Muni's trying to say to King Prachini Barishat. But through Prabhupada's purports, everything becomes crystal clear. You just try to understand to the best of your ability. And you go on hearing in this way. The process is submissively hearing. Just by going on reading the Bhagavatam and trying to understand according to your capacity and going on and on, in this way, you're hearing from the bona fide spiritual master. You're hearing Shukadeva Goswami's words through the instructions of his pure representative. And by that submissive hearing, Krishna will reveal the understandings. You cannot understand the Bhagavatam through intellectual scholarship. It's not possible. Only when Krishna reveals the inner meaning to you can you understand it. And he reveals the inner meaning when you submissively hear it regularly and when you serve the person Bhagavatams, the Lord's devotees. Any other questions?
What do we understand by submissive hearing? What exactly it means, submissive hearing?
It means putting aside all your preconceived ideas, accepting yourself to be a fool, and being willing to accept the superior authority without challenging of the spiritual master and the great sadhus. To open your heart, to open your mind, to open your ears, and to hear.
Thank you very much.